Welcome to the Diecast, everyone. I'm Seamus. With me this week is Josh.
What?
And Rutskarn.
Yes.
And Mumbles.
I thought we paid off everyone to make sure that Josh wouldn't show up. I'm very disappointed.
And Chris.
Hello.
All right. This week, yeah, Mumbles is here, and I've been anxious to hear your thought on No Man's Sky. We already took a dump on it a couple weeks ago, but you weren't here, and so you've been an apologist for the game, I think, for a while. I'm not sure. Maybe that's mischaracterizing you, but anyway, I've been anxious to hear.
Okay, yeah. So I didn't really have any expectations for No Man's Sky except for you go into space, you land on a planet that looks pretty similar to other planets you've landed on before. You gather resources to go back into space. And that's what I thought the game was going to be, and I was right. And it ended up being a little bit more because I really, really enjoyed the aliens and how you could, like, go collect all their words, and then you could see what they're actually saying. I love that so much. And to me, it was so addictive that, like, I would be like, I'm going to land on this planet and I'm going to get all their words. And, like, it was fun. But I think, like, for me, the game was more, like, therapeutic because I've been, like, super stressed out for the last, like, couple weeks about just life stuff. And to come home and play a really simplistic game where you just look at pretty scenery and learn words, like, is so nice and so, like, zen that I couldn't hate it. Like, I liked it. And I played it for a long time. Like, I would just play it, like, all night. And then the sun would come up, and I'd go take a walk, and I'd feel good. And that's why I don't understand people getting mad at this game. Because I'm like, how could you get mad at a game that's so, like, laid back and just, like, chill? We're going into space. So I just didn't get it.
You're ruining my
like,
script,
have
Mumbles.
You met the internet?
And how am I ruining your spin? Please
hamster. I'm saying I agree with you.
Oh no.
That was my take on the game until the Atlas Quest broke for me and then I declared vendetta.
No.
Yeah, I declared vendetta.
It's this really
on
weird
the
thing
game.
Where like Seamus came on when we first started talking about No Man's Sky and was pretty positive on it, and I was really, really dour on it. And then the internet decided they hate the game, and I decided that I kind of liked the bits of it that worked. I really, really liked. So now you're on the show saying you like it, and I'm like, yeah, I kind of like it too. And it's just this weird, like, my opinion of the game hasn't really moved, but like the world's opinion of it has moved around me, and I feel like some weird alien. But I agree.
In
Zen
the most
game
now I don't like
way
it.
Ever, by the
now
way.
Now that you like it, I don't like it.
Well, no, like
it's no longer cool.
Like, I actually was going to bring up the whole idea of a Zen game when I in my script. I want to talk about, like, you know, because it's not my Zen game. I know Seamus' Zen game is basically Minecraft. Mine is Race to Sun. Yeah. I just like playing that to zone out.
Right.
And I wanted to point out, like, as a Zen game, this is some top tier like stuff. And then I wanted to talk about how none of the other systems work, and the thing is like, when it tries to be more than that, when it tries to be a game proper, I kind of hate it. But when it comes to just, like, just not trying to play it, but just trying to experience it and be in chill, it works really well.
Yeah, yeah, I really
you can quote me on your new video. Be like, this is from Mumbles, it came from her brain, and this is put credit on it.
We're still
Mumbles
in Mumbles'
now.
Brain.
The problem is I have no public record of my script being written first, so this is going to be the first public thing.
I know.
And now I'm like...
Everyone will know.
Damn it.
Everyone will know that you take ideas from me, Campster.
Mumbles is the real Campster.
Can you even imagine being that lame? But anyway... I'm just kidding, kind of.
No, I get it. For him ruining the joke earlier.
No, I'm single day of the year. I get it.
I was going to say that, like, one of my top Zen games that everyone hated was Dragon Age Inquisition. And Dragon Age 2. Because all...
I can't imagine a Zen game being a game with talking. That's weird. But okay.
Well, because if you've the first time you play it through, it's not a Zen game. But I like to play BioWare games like 3 times through because I'm insane. And the second time you play it through, it's so Zen because you know everything people are gonna say, and they're just like blah blah blah. The thing is gonna happen, and you're like, totally, dude. Here, this one, and they're like, cool, thanks. And you're like, I'm gonna go explore this mountain. See you later. And then you go explore the mountain and you kill some dudes, and it's great. Just saying.
I really need to try that game again now that I have a decent computer. So I just remember everything was sluggy and, like, laggy the last time I tried to play it, and it really sort of ruined things. It basically became a game of...
I played it on console.
There you go.
I heard don't play it with a keyboard and mouse. I heard you're supposed to play it with a fucking controller.
Do not do that. It's so
awful. Well, I don't own one of those things.
You don't have a controller in your whole house? That's
insane. I have controllers, but I don't think they work with a computer.
What? Why else would you have a fucking controller?
Well, I just really like controllers, Mumbles. I use them to hold down papers, I use them to eat soup. They're very versatile devices. So I just, I remember Dragon Age Inquisition as the video game where entire villages suffered from disease and want and famine because the Inquisitor couldn't be fucked to get off his horse. Just like, oh hey, there's a life-saving herb right there. But I'm already late for my quest.
And I'm way up here on the horse, and it's way down there. If that plant grew taller,
I rarely use my horse. I would pretty much never use my horse because I would do all those dumb quests. Like, that's the thing about Zen games, is it's dumb and mindless, and it just makes your brain turn off for a couple hours. And that's nice if you've had a bad day.
That makes sense, though. I mean, like, I'm trying to actually think if I have an equivalent now.
I'm actually that way with
Bethesda games.
Sounds
familiar, but I can't put my finger on, like, what that game has been for me.
I played Skyrim like that pretty much the whole time.
I guess maybe
I'm like, who the fuck cares about, like, Skyrim's quests anyway?
No one.
Oh, you want me to go to this
dungeon? But it's so pretty.
Okay.
Skyrim's so pretty, and you're like, oh my gosh,
especially if you install a bunch of mods.
Oh, look at this cabin. Wow.
Look at this dragon that's actually Macho Man Randy Savage. And or a character from Thomas the Tank Engine.
So yeah, that's what I have to say.
Alright, so that's No Man's Sky. So, this week, Mankind Divided came out. And I think all the cool people on the show have played it, is that correct?
I haven't, so, yes.
No, because I have.
Right, Mumbles hasn't played it, though, so...
I haven't. So all the lame people. I'm the barometer for cool, so that...
Shit, because I'm on my second playthrough, so that doesn't bode well for me at all.
Oh,
you play games so much faster than everyone else here, Seamus, and I don't understand how.
Well, okay, I figured out something. I always do this, like, I try and do a perfect playthrough my first time through the game, and then I go through the game again, and I'm like, I'll do all the content that I missed, which isn't much, and I feel like I'm not getting out anything out of the second playthrough. And I finally figured out that's the wrong way to do
it. And yet...
The first time through the game, do this shitty playthrough. Take all the stuff that you don't nor like. Oh, that looks like a dumb idea. I'll do that. Just because I know this is my shitty playthrough. I'm not good at the game yet. I don't know all the secrets. I don't know all the tricks. So since this isn't going to be an optimal playthrough, I'll also take all the suboptimal routes and decisions, and I'll skip a bunch of side quests. Just to plow through the game. So my first playthrough was super short, like zero side quests. And that way I got a feel for the story, and now I'm working on my first real playthrough, which is all side quests. And this is taking, you know, an appropriate amount of time, where my first time through the game was almost a speed run. And I like this better. This is a good system. This is what I'm going to do from now on.
That would probably help me, because I tend to be, like, very obsessive about doing a completionist run through, but
right.
I also have no patience whatsoever for playing a game over again, so Like, this gets me when we're doing spoiler warning. It's like, hey, that game you played 6 months ago, you should probably play some more of it so that you can, you know where stuff is. And I'm like,
And for games like this, I prefer to play them multiple times. I want to see all the routes, and I don't want to, just watch it on YouTube. That feels lame. I want to do it. I'm actually in my mind planning a third playthrough, and it's just going to be my lol, do everything really stupid, murder everybody playthrough. Just take all the fun powers that I would never normally take, like just all the murder powers.
Are you going to genocide run and attempt to just kill everyone possible?
And like, I don't think genocide
totally understands.
Complex. Yeah, I don't think
the same way.
Yeah, I don't think genocide would be good. I mean, it would really be annoying to track down, you know, to some of those police checkpoints would be really a tough nut to crack. But, you know, I'm not against, you know, oh, you know what? The most expedient way through this quest is to just blow everybody away, even though I would normally never do that. I'm going to do that.
Does the game have a good counter for you just running around typhooning everything?
Well, typhoon ammo is expensive, I think.
I mean, I guess that.
Yeah.
Leave the shopkeepers alive so you can sell the stuff. So I haven't. I was actually gifted a copy of Mankind Divided, and I'm really looking forward to playing it because I've actually heard a lot of good things about it. But I can't install it because I don't have internet in my apartment, and I'm actually recording this remotely. But I remember from Human Revolution, I actually felt really awkward about typhoon ammo. Because it kept, like, bringing up this typhoon as a thing, and, like, it loaded it into the most pregnant, like, deeply meaningful segment of introduction. Like, it's the Chekhov's gun, and I never once used the thing because I didn't kill people.
So, in Mankind Divided, it has a gas grenade mode.
There you go.
So it's basically,
I mean, that's
a great
less
big
useful
gas
than just
grenade.
Throwing gas grenades by a large margin, but...
kind yes. of...
It's basically run into the room and drop a gas grenade at your feet that you're immune to. It's like, well, that,
I mean, in fairness, the typhoon wasn't much more practical than throwing mines or grenades in Human Revolution,
fair
but
enough.
It looked cool, and it was a boss-killing weapon, which was kind of important in that game.
Yeah. Can I just say how much I love the way they handled the new upgrades versus the old upgrades? That's something I've never seen a game do quite like that before. And I don't know if they are the first, but it's pretty neat.
I don't know what you're... I love the entire upgrade system in this game, but I don't know. Oh, yeah, the overclocking.
Like, it's a weird story-driven way to avoid the Metroid problem, where at the beginning of every game, Samus has her entire suit reset. So what this game does is basically say, they had to hard reboot you, so you get, you know, I think it's like 9 or 10 Praxis points for free at the beginning of the game, but you get to keep... You get to keep access to all of the powers from the first game, and you can immediately start dumping points into whatever you want. You could go straight to Typhoon, you can go wherever, but then the new things that this game introduces are like secret overloaded properties, and in order to unlock them, when you buy them, you have to then shut off permanently one of the powers from the old game. So you still have to make strategic decisions about what upgrades to get, and you can only still have a certain number of augmentations maximum. But you can either go full-on Adam Jensen from Human Revolution or take these new things by shutting yourself out of the old things. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Which is okay, yeah. Because depending on your playstyle, half of the augments in Human Revolution were going to be useless to you either way, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true here, too. But there's... But it's... The game, I think, is a lot more fun to sneak through. I felt like I had a lot more useful powers this time.
Yes,
this time.
They upped the amount of non-lethal and stealthy kind of stuff. Like, they took the hacking minigame from from Bioshock 2, the remote hacking minigame, basically verbatim wholesale stole it. But it works really well for giving you powers to do things like that. It's really neat, because now you don't have to worry about crossing cover, you can just remotely hack to get what you need done. Stuff like that.
So do we want to back up here and, like, actually introduce Mankind Divided, or...
Sure. Do it.
Oh, was that me volunteering? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so,
you just did.
Yeah, so Mankind Divided takes place 2 years after Human Revolution, the events of Human Revolution, incidentally in the same year as the first Ghost in the Shell movie. Which is a way better cyberpunk sci-fi film than these games are cyberpunk.
It really is so much better at discussing every single thing this game pretends it wants to talk about. But go ahead.
And in this, in the 2 years since Human Revolution, they've solved the horrible plague that gave everybody really tiny heads and made them all very twitchy. And generally gave the game a better art direction for when it comes to human anatomy.
So good. My wife doesn't normally make a fuss over graphics. She comes over, looks at a video game. Yep, that's another video game you sure are playing. But this one, she like stopped and was like, wow, this looks real. I was just running around Prague and she was just amazed at how good it looks. And it really does look fantastic. It's not like this huge open world like GTA 5 pushing this amazing, expansive world through its paces. It's really good art direction this time around. Just really, really sharp. And everything is really clear and really vibrant and really fun to look at.
I made a joke last episode about Deus Ex during the day, and it still doesn't quite feel Deus Ex-y to be walking around in a trench coat in broad daylight, but it's not as bad as I made it sound. The art direction sells a lot of that.
Okay, it's like barely cyberpunk. It's not even cyberpunk at this point anymore. It's like Human Revolution was edging away from cyberpunk on its own anyway. It was pushing like noir detective stuff a lot more than it was like cyberpunk transhumanism stuff. And like it's Mankind Divided still has like the cyber stuff, it has transhumanism as some kind of backdrop anyway, but all the punk is gone at this point.
Yeah, pretty much all of it. There's it's like this weird mix of they've got a little bit of the Victorian sort of, that was kind of a theme in Human Revolution, and it's still barely there in this game, and they mix that with like a sort of
Renaissance Victorian style stuff, fashion.
And they mix that with like a Back to the Future 2 future chic.
It looks a lot like, some of the areas look a lot like what I imagine a Half-Life 3 would look like if it came out in the recent past or near future. Because it's set in Prague in Eastern Europe.
That's another weird thing, is the whole game, I mean, there are a couple one-off locations, like you'll go someplace and come right back to Prague, but basically the Prague is the entire game. And that's another way it doesn't feel like Deus. It's not bad. I want to stress this is not bad. If this was, Cyberman Adventure Story, you know, a new entry in a new franchise, I would just be, oh, this is a wonderful game. But I can't help but thinking all the ways that this game just kind of refuses to be Deus Ex and moves away from,
It feels kind of like what Josh described Mirror's Edge to me to be. Like, there's this hub world where you can play some gameplay, but most of the gameplay takes place in missions away from the hub world, and the missions away from the hub world are actually designed for the gameplay, and it works really well, but the stuff that takes place in the hub world is sort of, like, shrunken down and miniaturized and designed to conform to the actual limitations of it being in this big open hub, and what drives me nuts is I always love Deus Ex levels as sort of giant open playgrounds of, here's a problem, figure out your own solution as to how to solve it. And when you're in something as big as Liberty Island, and there's a bunch of different ways to the top of the statue, that's interesting. That's an interesting problem to solve. How do I get to the top of the statue? You know, but it's way less interesting when it's like, go to Bob Bobson's apartment and break in and read what's on his computer. And you do this like 800 times through the game, and the choice is either always hack the door, find a vent, or go out on the window ledge. Just repeatedly. And that is a very Invisible War-y kind of choice that you make, because it's the hub world, and they're not going to give you, like, a big, interesting map.
Human Revolution also basically had this. It just had two hub worlds instead of just one.
Yes, but I also feel like the levels that were apart from those hubs were more fully formed. Like, there are good levels in this game. I really like the even ones that are in the hub world, there's one or two that are really good. I like the Palisade Bank. That is a really
the
nice
bank
level
because the top notch. Yeah, the bank is wonderful.
That's on like classic other, Deus Ex design.
Yeah, it totally is. On the other extreme, the Garm facility can go straight to hell. That entire sequence of the game.
I'm going there next.
Oh, I'm putting it off because the first time I went through it, I was just appalled. I'm like, well, shit. Why don't I just go play Gears of War? It was so frustrating to play through. It was just a box of bullet spongy enemies and cameras everywhere. And sneaking was really slow and tedious, and fighting was really, really, really unrewarding. And everything felt like a waste of time. And there's no story there, so it's just a giant murder machine. And I hated it so bad.
I find it interesting how they've tried to disincentivize combat a little bit. Or did no one else pick up on that? Am I crazy?
No, I think so too. I think combat is in general, like when it goes shooty time, I notice I die a lot quicker. Like you could play Deus Ex Human Revolution like a shooter, you know, if you just were determined to play it wrong. This game, that's a lot harder. Like you just die fast when they start swarming you and digging you out with grenades.
Human Revolution, you didn't have a lot of HP either.
Right.
And it was clearly the wrong way to play the game if you got into a firefight.
I know that Human Revolution, I think, rewarded you for this too, but this game does give you experience for non-lethal takedowns in addition to clearing the bad guy. And in addition to that, the inventory that is on the bodies is never that great, which means that actually eliminating someone isn't much of a reward other than just taking down either someone who's going to shoot you or someone who can spot you to get people to shoot you. So
that's really true. Like, do I want to take down this guy? I only want to take down people if they're going to be a huge problem for getting around. And they're much better about covering each other. I noticed a lot more situations where sneaking by somebody was just as viable as taking them out, where Human Revolution was kind of that take everybody out and then you can move around freely kind of thing, but now people cover each other.
I literally just played through the entirety of Human Revolution.
This is what I remember because I haven't played through it in 2 years.
And that's not like that different from what there were some instances in Human Revolution where like, oh, I want to get into these computers in this cubicle farm, so I should just kill everybody or knock everybody out. But then there was a lot of situations where it was just like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to fucking sneak past these guys. Fuck these guys.
There were levels like that. I remember the police office in general being a slowly knocking guys out to make your way through the cops in Detroit because you kind of had to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like the police, the police station in particular was just way easier to knock people out than to, you know, than to ghost it. And in this game, I find that happens less. There's a lot more times where it is just as viable. As long as you're observant, you can, like, in fact, often knocking people out is more of a hassle than sneaking by them.
So, do we want to talk about the story now? At least a little bit about it. We'll avoid spoilers.
We can talk about the setting, I think. Yeah, avoid spoilers.
So, again, this is 2 years after Human Revolution, and if you remember at the end of Human Revolution, spoilers for Human Revolution, Hugh Darrow, a character that was invented for Human Revolution to be the main villain and didn't show up until 4/5 of the way through Human Revolution to be the main villain, to give you an idea of how well that was all set up, created this great big hole in the ocean to solve global warming, and also worked with the Illuminati to put chips in everybody in all the augmented people's heads that made them go insane. And did that, made all of the augmented people in the world go insane basically all at once, unless you were a named character, because I guess that's how that works. I don't know if it was ever explained why Adam Jensen or David Seraph or whoever don't go nuts if they got the chip. And that created a great big huge, and I think like understand, like I I don't mind that they tackled this in Mankind Divided. But basically what happened is like literally millions and millions of people went into a killing spree all at once because of this, and that made everyone go, hey, maybe augments aren't such a great thing. Unfortunately, they do it in probably the most boneheaded way possible in terms of their politics and the way they present them, like wandering around and seeing Aug Lives Matter posters, and then next to them, All Human Lives Matter, and stuff like that, which
it
feels really, 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 really bad.
It's just a weird mishmash of every type of prejudice that has basically ever existed, all blended together in a way that makes no sense. Like, you have Nazi-style, Gestapo-style papers, please, guys. Like, you as an Aug get stopped in the street, and they have you, you know, the cops regularly ask for your papers as just a random encounter with cops.
The whole game is actually just kind of pulling from like, high Soviet-era imagery when it comes to that.
I don't know, because there's also the literal ghetto of Gollum City. There's the alternate lines for Augs versus humans, which is very Jim Crow era. There's legislation that's trying to be passed that feels like more recent legislation that is passed aimed at certain groups. You just end up with, you know, it's just a hodgepodge of every majority group oppressing a minority that's ever happened in history, and there's just like some vague reference to it, but it doesn't coalesce into anything meaningful. It's just...
I wonder if they had any actual minorities on the writing staff. Or if it was bunch of white dudes being like, you know what's cool is if we took all of the racist and weird shit across time and space and just put it all in the same game. Like, I feel like maybe if they had someone that, understood it, it'd be a little bit more nuanced.
They had an argument with the internet where they claimed that they came up with the blank Lives Matter thing, and they probably didn't. Because people were calling that out as like, well, that seems boneheaded and insensitive, and misrepresenting the actual groups involved. They claimed that they came up with Aug Lives Matter, that like the Lives Matter stuff was them first, and then it became a political movement. And that's like kind of gives you an idea, a microcosm, if you will, of probably what they feel about this whole thing. They doubled down on it instead of stepping back.
Wow.
Previously, I felt that Eidos came off as a bit insensitive, but now it appears that they're the forerunners boundary pushers in human rights movements, and I feel like I have to apologize.
I mean, the other thing is that the game abandons this pretty quickly. Like, the opening 3 or 4 hours is very, very interested in the augmentation versus non-augmentation debate, and it sort of still kind of is as the game progresses, but it starts becoming more and more a MacGuffin to drive the Illuminati plot. Like, the game is very explicitly kind of not about any of this. It kind of gestures vaguely for the opening act to go, like, we have something to say about important things. And the important thing is that Bob Page is an asshole. Like, that's the big reveal, really, is that, like, the Illuminati are evil. Like, because the game, like, starts very much like, oh, man, I'm an Aug living in a city in like, the first legally segregated Aug city. They're asking for my papers. This is going to be intense. And then eventually you're just freely going wherever you want because you're an Interpol agent that has access to everything. And the real question is, like, who's got control of the Illuminati? Like, that is very quickly where it goes. And at that point, like, the Aug angle just drops off the face of the planet.
The one thing
Which is unfortunate.
I was disappointed that they made it so black and white. I would have praised it a lot more if it was way more shades of... Like, if some of the people asking for your papers were clearly not... every cop you meet is an Aug-hating asshole. Every single one of them is like, oh, but, you know, if you sneak up on them, you'll hear them talking. They're like, we should just put them down like animals. That's how every cop is. And that just rubbed me the wrong way. That's just... like, don't bring up all this real world imagery and then use such a cartoonish stormtrooper view of things. If it was like one cop was kind of uncomfortable with asking for your papers and almost apologetic about it, and another one was a jerk, and another one was like, look, this is just the way it is. And if you got the sense that there was like this diversity of opinions, but no, people are either hippie Og lovers or fascist Og haters, and there's almost nothing in there's nobody in between that's saying, look, I wouldn't take any Ogs myself, but you know, no hate for people that do. Like, there's none of that. Or the one person...
That's just not how history works.
Right.
That's just not how the real world works.
Or there should be the one person being awkward to you and, like, trying to relate to you. You know, he's a normal and you're an Og, and he's trying to reach out to you, and he's doing it in kind of a clumsy way, and you can, like, push back, or you can just humor him. Like, there's all sorts of cool moments they could have thrown in there if they actually wanted to do this. But they didn't.
They also commit weirdly to the idea that Ogs are a type of people, which I don't think the game ever fully sells me on. Like,
right.
After the events of 2027, why don't they just all go back to dumb Ogs, dumb prosthetics? And like, I know there might be some people that you know, like, if I replaced both of my eyes with robo eyes that can see a million times better, and suddenly I'm told I need to go blind, that could be an interesting problem. But if I just... You know, I had one arm, you know, I lost one arm, and then they replaced it with a robo arm. Like, I get not wanting to go back to a regular prosthetic, and that could be an interesting topic onto itself, like, you know, body autonomy versus the social order and all that stuff. That could have been an interesting conversation, but they don't. Like, there's not a single person that's, like, literally got one arm in the game and no Ogs, just missing an arm, going like, you know, after 2027, I lost a kid or whatever, and I just, you know... I couldn't deal with it, so I chopped off my robot arm, and now I'm just fully human. Nothing like that. They treat Ogs as, like, permanent and forever. You are now an Og, and that is a label that will follow you for life.
Which, interestingly enough...
That's how they could have made it punk. Like, it seems like there's not really any punk in it. Like, they could have made it punk by, like, all right, we're getting rid of all of the advanced Ogs, and then there's, like, an underground group of people who are like, but what if we don't? What if we make them better? And then those underground people would be the punk rock, like, cyberpunk stuff. You know what I mean? It's real simple. It's so easy.
Here's the thing about all that. Literally every single example that you and Campster just came up with was in Human Revolution.
Yeah, I know. And that's because Human Revolution was about something different.
Yeah. And it's weird that, like, this game has even less of that.
Well, no, I think it makes sense, because so this is my theory, and I'm going to just totally spoil my own script in the future. I got to stop talking about my crap on here. basically, my idea is that, like, I always loved the end of the original Deus Ex, because it was sort of like this weird treatise on government power from out of nowhere. Like, it was, you know, do you believe in a dictator that is a benign dictator, or do you believe in continuing a sort of oligarchy of power, or do you believe that power needs to be distributed back to the individuals, even if that means a less coherent or meaningful system overall and people suffer? And that was a really interesting political question to me when I was 16 and the game came out. But it also was basically a what is your political philosophy? Answer this. And it seems like that's what Deus Ex as the Eidos Montreal series is starting to do, is just sort of like, none of the games are about anything, because they're all just sort of presenting you with an interesting moral conundrum that, you know, that could be addressed by a game in an interesting manner, and instead presenting you with sort of the most 16-year-old version of politics going, which one do you believe? Do you believe that Ogs are monsters because they're dangerous and should be locked up in a literal ghetto? Or do you believe that maybe people should be given a chance? Do you believe that, you know, the human transcendence movement is really cool because you get robot arms that have blades in them? Or do you believe that maybe leaving humans behind is maybe problematic and could cause, you know, problems? That seems to be what they're doing.
Is that even, like, an accurate description of it? Or is it like... Which is your philosophy? That Ogs are all terrible people who are congenitally monsters? Or, like, 30-second video of Adam Jensen tearing a guy apart with his robot arms while cool sound effects go on in the background?
It's more nuanced than that. But
see,
not
I felt
too much.
Like, I felt like it never gave the anti... Again, I think for the second game running, it never gave me or never gave the anti-Og argument any allure. And I would love to write that. I would like to write an actual anti-Aug argument that, you know, comes from some sort of principled place of like, hey, maybe this is a bad idea. Maybe we shouldn't just do this. Maybe the rich people will leave poor people behind. Maybe this will stop us from improving ourselves in other ways.
Or put it right on the nose with the whole incident from last game and say, like, well, if people can be affected by something, like, universally all Augs can be affected by some event that makes them go nuts, maybe that can happen again. Maybe we should rethink this whole thing.
Right. Oh, we're good.
Then that would be exactly what Hugh Darrow wanted. We can't have that.
Oh, you know, is somebody coming from it, like a gun control thing? Oh, you know, we don't want people buying guns, but we're going to let you run around with a gun for an arm? That doesn't make any sense, you know? There are all kinds of interesting arguments you could make against Augs. And
I feel like,
oh, what's it like? We're going to just make these people that don't leave, that don't have fingerprints? That, you know, people that literally do not have fingerprints. This is a huge draw for criminals. It makes them more dangerous. It makes people more likely to fight because they feel indestructible, and violence is up just because people think they, you know, could win a fight more often and they're more likely to pick one.
I think the game would be more interesting if it wasn't about, like, secret agent bullshit and more about, like, being a detective. Sounds like it'd be a really fun detective game.
Oh, man, sign me up.
My ideal game would be like a detective game where you would start out as a dude with no Augs. And, like, if you have no Augs, you basically need to do everything the hard way. Like, you can't just get into a gunfight because you'll get ripped to shreds. You know, you have to, like, really sort of do your homework and research situations. And, like, you have to know everybody, push everybody's buttons. You need to make sacrifices. Or you could drop a bunch of cash, go down to the Aug clinic and get a chainsaw arm.
Yeah.
And then just run through chainsawing people. And that's sort of like, that folds the question of, like, what is the purpose of Augs in a society, and what the benefits and the downsides, and why would you choose to get Augs or not choose to get Augs into the actual gameplay decisions?
See, I feel like Human Revolution was like 75% detective story anyway. It wasn't too far off from what you're talking about, aside from, like, well, Adam's already augmented. You're already an awesome badass dude with robot arms. And that's, like, a problem with Deus Ex in general, which is that in 2000, conspiracy theory stuff was a lot more acceptable and in vogue in general than it is now in 2016.
A lot of people don't realize how much of the Deus Ex stuff, because, you know, a lot of the people are young. The stuff in the original Deus Ex came out of the 90s conspiracy theories. The whole thing with, like, FEMA, you'd hear people on talk radio talking about, I think President Clinton's going to use FEMA to declare martial law and take over and not leave office in 2000. And that was like, and so they folded. That was like one of the conspiracy theories of the day, and they folded that into their world.
This isn't going to get dated or anything, but to modern Americans, it's almost the equivalent of, like, a game where the government comes for all of your guns, and then, like, chemtrails from airplanes start sterilizing people who don't have the right political party
affiliation. Even chemtrails are, like, old hat stuff by this point that nobody believes in.
There's not enough crazy new conspiracy theories over the past, like, 5 years or so.
It's because we already live in a cyberpunk future, Utzkar.
All the conspiracy theories are all centered around corporations, and a lot of it's true. Like, okay, how much of my information is Facebook keeping? Just how much are they watching?
And more than you thought.
I guess that's my problem with Mankind Divided, is they seem to have decided to talk about issues less while intensifying sort of the rhetoric they're putting into the game. So they're like, this game is about racism and it feels really politically charged, but then you get in there and it doesn't have shit to say about the topic.
No, it's very much about the Illuminati.
Yeah.
And they had, like, I think they had the perfect excuse to bring up these sorts of themes with, you know, the end of the last game, and so many games have sequels where, like, oh, all that stuff at the end of the last game where it seemed like the world was ending didn't really matter. This game, it did, but apparently not enough to actually, like, they didn't have enough faith, I guess, in that to just make it that, and so they had to go around and pick up every fucking, like, racial conflict allegory they could.
Exactly. The people that hate Oggs don't hate Oggs because of the incident, which is what it's called. None of them are like, you know, my grandma was eviscerated by a guy, you know, or was, you know, had her head crushed by a guy with robo arms, so don't ask me to give you a break. Nobody does that to you.
But
I never ran into anybody that was traumatized during the incident. And you,
there's some side quest. There is a side quest. Yeah, there is a side quest where a dude, like, talks about how he flipped out during the incident and, like, I guess killed his grandson by accident.
Right, but nobody uses that as an excuse for why they hate Oggs. Like, the world is filled with people who hate Oggs, and for no reason. They never talk about it. They just hate them all the time and will just want to put them down like dogs. And I'm willing to believe that from the end of the last game, but it never, you know, they don't sell it. They don't go anywhere with it.
I think part of the problem is that to confront that, they would have to confront the fact that Oggs are not a type of people. Like, they have this metaphor set up where Oggs are treated as any other type of people that have been oppressed, but typically types of people that get oppressed can't change that about themselves, right? Like, if you have a certain ethnicity or lineage or race or religion to some degree or another, maybe a little bit, but mostly, you know, most oppressed peoples can't change the thing that's being oppressed about themselves. Otherwise, a lot of them would just change that about themselves so they wouldn't be oppressed.
Work in if the game were doing speculative fiction and cyberpunk stuff about, you know, what will people look like? What will the divisions in society look like in 50 years when we have all this new technology that can actually literally change what it means to be a human? But again, that's not what this game is about.
That also gets into the one thing that does, not what the one thing, but one of the things about the story that really still sticks in my craw is, it's still got the baggage from Deus Ex, and so the original Deus Ex, insofar as its timeline, and it didn't really make sense in Human Revolution, but at this point, 5 years after Human Revolution, it's starting to get goofy. We're it's not that far years. From 2027.
It's 2 years. It's 13 from Human years Revolution? From now.
No. It's,
Human
it's
Revolution
5 years.
Human Revolution was 2027.
5 years, human, real, alpha world, this physical reality time. It's been like 5 years.
Yeah. It's
been 5 years now. It's 2016 and not 2011. So 2027, it's 11 years away. Like the events of Human Revolution with Hangzhou with the double decker literal city island, that's 11 years away. They would have to be building it now.
They better get started on that shit because that thing looked old and rickety and sort of ghetto-ish when it was there. It had obviously been there a while.
That's kind of the funniest, like, that's probably, if you want to say that Human Revolution takes place in an alternate universe and was always intended to do so, Hangzhou is probably the best evidence you have of that, because Hangzhou Island right now is an alluvial island in the Yangtze River delta. It is currently used as basically agricultural space in Shanghai. It is okay. There are orchards on that island.
Well, they just need to build
what's
a city
there right now
on a platform over all those farms.
Yeah, no, they need to build
great.
A city, and then they need to build another city on top of that city, and then they need to get it like people out there to spray rust over everything.
I think it is a alternate timeline at this point, like, officially. I mean, obviously, it's fictional. It's an alternate timeline. There's no guy named... Jensen was born in 1993. There's no Adam Jensen with Bio-Oggs in 1993. Although, even if you step back and look at that timeline, that seems crazy to think, like, you know, we need a guy who's resistant to augmentation in 1993, so let's start engineering him, because whatever. You would have, you would have had to start it...
Or something.
Anyway, my point was more that there's a Russian Federation that basically, it's implied, took over the Ukraine or got in a fight with the Ukraine. There's some extended, it's in one of the codec things. One of the characters' backstory is that he was a Ukrainian separatist and the new United Russian Federation.
Marchenkov or whatever his name is.
So it's clear, and they say like in 2016 there was a conflict, and it is 2016, so I'm assuming this is an alternate timeline.
The god emperor of this new Russian Federation.
It was world-building stuff. They just mentioned the United Russian Federation. They don't really go into what it means. I assume it means that it was an attempt by Russia to reclaim some of its territory lost during the, you know, fall of the USSR, but that's just me reading into the name.
Campster, did you just tweet about the thing that you're talking about right now? Like, 10 minutes ago?
You nerd!
Wow. I was like, I'm bored. Deus Ex is dumb. I'm gonna check Twitter. I was like, wait a second! I can't escape it!
So for the record, what I tweeted was, I don't think Frank Pritchard's screenplay is ever gonna be adapted into a film if he keeps leaving it with squatters in the Prague.
Wait, did he... Is that... From like that was in Human Revolution on his computer. Is that also in this game?
It's a notepad. It's a printed out version of his script that is used for decoration wherever they need notepads. So it's in Jensen's apartment, and that makes sense because they were old buddies. But then it's also used as like random notepads throughout the game environment in like squatter hotels and apartments and stuff.
I love the idea that Adam Jensen is secretly a fan of Nuclear Snake's screenplays.
Yeah.
So months ago I decided I was going to play through Human Revolution again before playing Mankind Divided, because it had been 4 years since I played it, and it seemed like a good time to play through it again and see how I felt about it. And then I didn't realize that Mankind Divided was coming out last week until the week before that, so I very quickly scrambled to play Human Revolution. I decided to play the Director's Cut, which I'd never played before. And that, they changed some stuff with the bosses that doesn't really matter. They changed the aesthetic a little bit by making things somewhat less black and gold all the time, which I think actually worked. It's still got a very yellow color scheme in general, but it's not as oppressive. Of course, like, it's weird because now in all the pre-rendered cutscenes, it looks like you're in a different fucking movie or game because everything's way more yellow. They added in some stuff from the DLC, and then they also, they appended the one major DLC that the game had, The Missing Link, which I had also never played. We decided not to do that for our Human Revolution spoiler warning season because it came out in the middle of that season, and we were like, yeah, whatever. And also at the time you had to like jump out of the game and launch it from a separate thing. It was designed as a standalone story, clearly. This was The Missing Link, and that was set during the point when Adam Jensen leaves Hangzhou the second time and gets into that stasis pod and hops on a boat, and then like a week goes by and he wakes up in Singapore, which always felt like there was some missing stuff there. The Director's Cut, unfortunately, appends The Missing Link into the actual gameplay flow right in that segment with no options to skip, and it sucks. It is really bad. The Missing Link itself is not necessarily a bad thing, although it is basically a 4-hour long murder dungeon.
Oh, boo. I'm glad I skipped it.
It actually ties into the story of Mankind Divided. The Juggernaut Collective is introduced, although not named, in The Missing Link.
Do they name Janus?
No. No, they bring in Quinn. You meet him in that DLC. But it does several things that are super annoying. First off, it's like three-fourths of the way through the third act. You are ready to go find Megan and resolve the whole game, and then you end up in a 4-hour long DLC segment that is entirely, basically entirely stealth and hiding from people or just shooting people in the face. And they
there's
also,
no dialogue, no side questing, no
there's dialogue and a few side quests. So the one side quest is literally go find the parts to make a rocket launcher. Okay. basically, Adam Jensen gets caught and ends up in this secret bell tower that is the private military corporation who had all the mooks from the first game. They have like a secret offshore base where they're doing a bunch of experimentation, and it explores like the backstory of the Hiron Project. That's the computer that uses young women. Apparently, I guess that's the only ones that are suitable for it. That Zhao Yenru uses as the final boss fight in the game.
So goofy.
The one where I shot her through the window with the laser gun. And you explore. You get some backstory for Bob Page. You meet Savage for the first time. But like. You already were in a murder dungeon for a little while in Hangzhou. You jump into the boat part and end up in another longer murder dungeon that seems to have nothing to do with what you're already doing. Then you jump out of there, end up in Singapore for another 2-hour long murder dungeon, and then you end up in Pangaea for another 2-hour long murder dungeon. It just ruins the pacing of the game. Also, it's in the middle of the third act of Human Revolution, and the DLC was clearly never designed to be appended to into the actual flow of the game. So, and they didn't really adjust this. So you get into the DLC and all of your stuff gets reset, and you get to build your character again with like limited praxis points. So you end up going from being basically an augmented god to being back in like Act One Adam Jensen, where you can't hack everything all the time, and you have no equipment, and it's just really awful.
And now I'm just picturing Adam Jensen on the boat opening up like a computer terminal and being like, I don't remember how to open Telnet. Like just completely yeah. Blanking on everything.
It's a bit like that. You end up with, like, maybe getting, like... You start off basically back at level 1, and you can maybe get, like, 12 or 13 praxis points through the entire DLC. So you kind of have to pick and choose exactly what kind of playstyle you're going with, because you're not going to be able to adjust and change course as the thing progresses. Again, this probably all works well enough if it's... a standalone thing, but it just does not fit into Human Revolution, and it was super, super annoying to get to that point in Human Revolution, where I'm already like, okay, Mankind Divided is out now, I want to play it, oh, okay, the DLC is just this long murder dungeon where I don't know where everything is now, and I don't really care about what's going on. It was really disappointing and frustrating. And that was kind of how I spent the past several days. I'm not even that far into Mankind Divided as a result of this.
It's like if you went into the Avengers movie just before, you know, they get to New York and they're about to fight the big bad guy, and then you pause the movie there and then go watch the first Captain America movie for a couple hours and then come back.
It is that. It is literally that.
So it just kills the momentum.
The director's cut is really nice in everything else, but they should not have put that into the base game. They should have left it as like, hey, you can pull this up as a side story. Because it doesn't work. It ruins the pacing. It doesn't fit thematically or mechanically, because you get completely reset. You lose all your awesome powers. Again, in the middle of the third act, and it's too long. It just sucks all the momentum out of the end of the game. Definitely do not play the director's cut before playing through the game initially as it was originally released.
Okay.
Also, they included the pre-order Rescue Tracer Tong mission, and I got really confused for a little while because I got to that point where you meet Tong in the parking garage and you go save his son. I'm like, did this happen in the original game? I don't remember this mission. I don't remember Tracer Tong being here.
All right. Harry Potter. Wait, why is Harry Potter on the list? Who did this? Who was responsible for this?
Okay, that was me.
I should have known. Damn it, Rockstar. Yeah,
so it was actually a couple weeks ago I asked if anybody'd read the new Harry Potter play, and at the time nobody had, and I believe that is still the case.
I'm so excited for this.
I had it on my desk. My wife has apparently read it, and she put it on my desk talking about it at some point, but I just sort of like just tried not to set my drink on it for a few days until it went away.
Is there a reason it's a play?
Because J.K. Rowling doesn't want to write any more books, but she can come up with a story and then other people can write a play, which isn't really stepping on her toes. I don't know. That's my read on it. Anyway.
When you change mediums, you get kind of get a little bit of leeway in your lore. It's true. You can argue that it's not canonical. Yeah.
I had zero excitement for the book right up until like some post about a midnight launch party tweaked a little bit of nostalgia. See, I actually really like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, I got the books like as early as possible as a kid and would just sit on the bathroom floor reading them until like 5 a.m. I'd finish them. It's like they're a very important part of my childhood, and kind of I admit that I got like sort of to a point where I'm like, okay, I need to get the new book and I need to sit down and have a cup of tea and read it and just be like, you know, like I was when I was a kid, I guess. And
they're kind of like a warm hug. Like the Harry Potter books are like, oh, this is nice. This is a world that is nice for me. And then, I used to be the same way. I went to all the like movie midnight premieres with my friends when I was like in middle school and high school, and like, yeah, so I totally understand.
So I read it. You know, I basically curled up that evening and I read the whole thing. It's a play, it's not that long. And yeah, I was sort of thought to myself, that was interesting, and I enjoyed parts of that, really, and I don't know how I feel about it, but, you know, it brought back this nostalgia, and that's what's important. I sort of rode that high. And I didn't really know what to think about it for a few days until somebody asked about it, and I'm like, yeah, okay, you're not planning to read it, you want to know what happens? And I started telling them what happens, and then I thought about it, and I realized, oh, right, okay, it's a piece of shit. That makes sense.
Oh my god. Oh, it's so exciting for me. I love hearing when things are bad.
It is total fucking garbage.
Oh, it's really tell me bad. How. Please tell me why it's bad. Oh.
This is like so I know that there's a lot of cracked out like nutso fan fiction out there, and this is probably not the most nutso cracked out fan fiction you'll ever read, but it's pretty up there. Like, okay, I'm about to start spoiling shit left and right, and this is the end of the show,
yes.
So everybody just check out right now. Thanks for listening. If you don't want to know exactly what happens in this goddamn play. Okay, so here's what's up. You know, J.K. Rowling's been like kind of spackling over some of the plot holes in the universe over the past few years, and it's been kind of like, we don't really need you to do that, J.K. It's fine. We were 12. It's okay. Well, one of the big plot holes was time turners, right? Because every asshole on the internet's like, well, actually, they could have used the time turners to fix everything in the Harry Potter universe.
Is this the Eagles explanation?
Yeah, and apparently, at some point, somebody decided that they needed to acknowledge that and write a play that was just about the time turners. And I just got to that point in the play, and I'm like, oh no. Please let this be a red herring. Please don't make this entire play about going back in time and changing things. Like, Back to the Future with Harry Potter characters that I don't care about.
Man.
They did! It's so bad. Okay, I'm gonna take it from the top.
Yes! Okay.
They Bioshock Infinited this.
Oh, no!
Oh, even worse, I would say.
Oh my god! Okay. I'm ready for this. I'm so ready.
Okay. So here's the plot. So it leaves off exactly where the fifth book ends up, with our main characters in their 40s and their kids with the worst names in the entire literary universe going off to Hogwarts. And so we got Harry's kid.
Yeah, I think one of them is like Albion.
No, Harry's kid is Albus Servius Severus Dumbles. Potter.
Oh, God.
Albus Severus Potter. He's like, hey, kid, let me saddle you with the names of these dead legendary Roman? People. Because being the son of Harry goddamn Potter is not enough of a burden to carry. And okay, to the play's credit, they wanted to examine that. So Albus Severus Potter is going to Hogwarts with... let's see, what's it? Rose Granger Weasley. Oh, by the way, can I just say, whoever wrote this play was not J.K. Rowling. Like, the dialogue and stuff is written by somebody else. And it pisses me off because they clearly subscribe to the movie version of Ron Weasley. Like, book version of Ron Weasley is brash, you what, mate? Like, come fight me. I will stand on this fucking battlefield.
Fight
until
me,
the
IRL,
war is won.
Yeah.
And movie Ron Weasley. Yeah, and Ron Weasley in the movies is just like, oh no, scary stuff is happening, Potter! Nah. And, like, that's the kind of Ron Weasley you get in the play. It's actually super shitty. Anyway. It's like they didn't get the memo that Ron is sort of cool. Okay, so, but that doesn't matter that much. Albus Severus Potter is going to Hogwarts, and he meets up with Draco Malfoy's son, Scorpius Malfoy. So Albus Severus and Scorpius meet
Scorpius,
up and
Scorpius Vader Malfoy.
Yeah, and okay, so Granger Weasley, Rose Granger Weasley, the son of Ron Weasley and Hermione Granger, takes one look at Scorpius and is like, oh, we shouldn't associate with him. He's evil. And she storms off. Like, she totally snubs him. And Albus Severus is like, well, maybe you're cool.
No, girls only do that when they have a crush
on
someone.
I'll get to that.
I know how that works.
Okay, so here's what we got going on here. Albus Severus is talking to Scorpius, and Scorpius is like, all right, listen, people don't like me very much because there's a rumor going around that Voldemort fucked my mom. And that's why I'm around. And it's like, okay, so that's Scorpius' thing, is that there's a rumor that Voldemort is his daddy.
No!
And if you think that's stupid, you need to keep listening.
No way!
Because it gets so much
no
worse.
No way!
It gets so much worse.
Oh my god.
Okay, so they get to Hogwarts, and Albus Severus is sorted into Slytherin.
Who would have thought?
He's sorted into Slytherin with Scorpius. And
okay.
At this point, Albus Severus just becomes the biggest pariah ever. Like, Harry Potter's son is just bullied to shit and nobody likes him, and he has to hang out with Scorpius. And it, like, teases that Scorpius and Albus are, like, have crushes on each other, but it's the sort of thing where it just sort of teases it, and then it, like, throws in stuff like, what? Oh, no, they're into girls. You thought they weren't into girls? That doesn't make any sense. Yes, no, they have dates and stuff, or they want dates. Anyway, that was just my read on it. I was actually kind of annoyed that, like, it felt like they were baiting a little bit. Like, they were baiting that they were gonna get together, but apparently that's a thing that happens a lot in fan fiction from the, like, criticism I've seen.
You wouldn't
know. They're a master at that sort of baiting.
Yeah. Okay, so... Alright, so here, I'm just gonna skip straight to, like... Oh my god. God damn it. I'm on a slight delay, which made that joke even worse. Okay, so I'm just gonna skip straight to the good part, which is actually later in this act, where at this point, Cedric Diggory, the guy who died in Goblet of Fire, his dad goes up to Harry like, I know the Ministry of Magic has a time turner that they seized in a raid. I want you to give me the time turner so I could go back in time and save my son from getting murdered by Voldemort. And Harry's like, no. And conversation's happening, Albus Severus meets, like, Diggory's caretaker, who's this, like, attractive 20-something woman named Delphine. And Delphine, let me tell you about Delphine. She is very boring. She's a woman who is in theory romantically available to the teenage character Albus, and that is everything you need to know about Delphine for most of this play. It's like just like it's a very lame character who turns out to be very important. So, but she doesn't really have much going on at this point.
Does everybody have a fucking Latin or Greek name in this goddamn book?
Oh, her name's Delphi, actually. Her name is Delphi, that's right. Okay, so...
That's even worse!
But she sort of sets up like, oh, your dad has this time turner, but he won't save everything. I only wish some brave, strong guy would save Cedric Diggory. And Albus goes up to Scorpius... And together, they're like, okay, listen, let's go back in time and save Cedric Diggory. Let's do what my dad won't. So they're on the Hogwarts Express, and they're like, we're going to jump off the Hogwarts Express. And we're going to go, like, to the Ministry of Magic and get Polyjuice Potions with Delphi, and we're going to steal the Time Turner. And so they climb up onto the roof. And you guys remember the cart lady who, like, handed out, like, snacks and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, the cart lady climbs on top of the moving train, and she's like, I'm actually hundreds of years old. I'm this guardian thing that rides the train, and I never let anyone get off. And then her hands turn into spikes. Her hands turn into spikes.
Holy shit, she's an hog.
Yeah.
Damn hogs.
She's the T-1000. That's how it happens. So that happens, and then... Harry and Ron, Albus and Scorpius, the less cool characters, they jump off the train. And that's how that scene ends.
Okay, then.
Okay,
yeah, the bag lady gets up there and is like, you're not jumping off my train. And then they jump off the train.
Okay.
Like, I was actually had to reread it, like, a few times to make sure I didn't miss anything. But no, it's just, like,
so,
really
stupid.
That's
what I call a Firewatch resolving issue. Something's really bad and dangerous. Oh, no, it's
fine. This is fan fiction. Holy shit.
Okay, at this point, now, it cuts to Harry Potter in bed, and Harry's having these nightmares again, and his scar's hurting. Oh, no, his scar is hurting. But Voldemort's dead. Isn't he? Meanwhile, Albus, Scorpius, and Delphi are going to the Ministry of Magic, and they infiltrate in Polyjuice Potion, and I think there's a part, if I didn't hallucinate it, I think there's a part where, like, Scorpius smooches, like, Hermione Granger or something? And that happened. And then they... Because he's disguised as Ron Weasley, so he has to make it convincing, so he smooches Hermione. And then they get into the office, and it turns out that the Time Turner, which is, like, one of the most dangerous and horrifying magical artifacts in the world, is protected by several riddles in the office. And also some scary book
riddles?
Thing. Yeah, riddles. So they solve the riddles. See, if I was protecting something with a riddle, I would have it be, what's 2 + 2? And the minute you say anything besides geranium, you're devoured. But apparently, the ministry does not have truck with such shenanigans.
No, you need to have your passwords and your password hints on the same page, Rutskarn.
You're saying it should be guarded by a chessboard of pieces that fight each other?
Touché, there were Jamis. Different layers! Touché. They were different layers, okay? It wasn't just a chessboard. There were other things happening down there. But let me just say, I'm very disappointed, because if these people had actually watched a Batman, or perhaps even read a Batman, riddles don't work. Riddles are nothing.
Back to Batman, doesn't it?
Riddles are nothing.
After Batman.
And you're gonna get punched in the face if you try.
So they solved the riddles, by the way. It's like two random teenagers and some woman with no personality solve the riddles.
Two random.
So
see, that's the thing. In Batman, two random teenagers solve Riddler's riddles all the time. One time it was like Robin and Spoiler, and they're like, oh yeah, this is easy, we've got it. And Riddler's like, ah, dang it. Dang it. Why riddles? Why did I do this? Okay, anyway, go ahead.
So that was only Act 1, so I'm gonna have to speed up a little bit, but
There's
just so pregnant with stupid shit. It gets
you
worse
guys
every
did Deus Ex for like 20 minutes. We get to do Harry Potter. That's what's
much
fair.
Longer than 20 minutes.
Okay, so Albus and Scorpius are like, we can go back in time and pretend to be Durmstrang or whatever. But we have to go alone. Delphi can't go with us. She's too boring. I mean, she's too conspicuous. And so they time turn and they go back in time. And their plan is they're going to go to the, like, the dragon part of the Triwizard Tournament, and they're going to disarm him, like, disarm Cedric Diggory so that he can't fight the dragon. And they go back in time and they do that, and they come back to the present. And meanwhile, like Harry Potter is, like, finding out all sorts of, like, from the centaurs, like, there's a dark cloud over your son, something bad's gonna happen to your son, and Harry's like, wow, I really am a shitty father, and they're like, yeah, you're pretty much the shittiest father. Actually, no, nobody says that, but everybody needed to be saying that to Harry Potter constantly. There's actually a part in this book where Harry says, like, to his son, I wish, like, you had turned out differently. Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
Oh, Harry.
Yep.
That's stone cold.
I actually kind of don't mind Harry turning out to be a bad father. Like, he didn't have a father. I
mean, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
He ends up fathering, like, the Dursleys. Yeah.
So you guys are never going to believe this, but it turns out that saving Cedric Diggory's life means that all other kinds of shit goes wrong.
No way. Like,
yeah, it turns out that this is why I don't like time travel stories, because immediately it's transported to a world where the character's decisions are not canon and aren't going to influence everything once the timeline is reset. And it's like, why do I care about this story then?
Anyway. Yeah.
So, yeah, it turns out everything's wrong. Turns out in this universe, Albus got sorted into Gryffindor. And also his dad's like, you can't see Scorpius anymore because he's an evil kid. And I think that's the evil thing everybody's talking about. I'm the best. I'm going to have the school, like, make sure that you don't see him. And McGonagall's going to use the Marauder's map to make sure you guys never see each other. Yeah, I think I fixed everything. Harry out. And McGonagall? It doesn't go well.
Wow. Wait.
No, never mind. Don't answer my question. Just keep going.
It also turns out that Ron never married Hermione because a bunch of, like, little butterfly wing bullshit. And Ron is basically, like, a slobbering, sniveling wreck who's just, like, not cool. And Hermione is a teacher at the school, and she's super mean. And Scorpius is like, I don't like this universe. The lady I'm super attracted to, like, Hermione's daughter, who's really rude and awful to me, she's not here to date. I need to go back in time and fix it. So he decides to go back in time, and this time, like, it turns out that what he did, like, disarming Cedric, it didn't actually really change anything big. So this time he's going to go back, and he's going to disarm Cedric Diggory by making him really embarrassed, actually. He's going to, like, humiliate him and take him out of the tournament, and that way Cedric won't get back into the tournament, and that way he won't end up in the garden maze, and that way he won't get killed. Oh, okay, you know, that sort of makes sense in a don't do this, it's time travel, you idiot kind of way. So, fine, sure. You want to guess how that goes?
Okay, so the whole point of Cedric dying is that all the Death Eaters think that Harry Potter's going to come through first, because they're like, Harry's the best, of course he's going to come through first. And Cedric is the guy who comes in first, so they kill him. And then Harry comes in second. Isn't that what happens in the book?
So, no, like, why Harry shows up and sees Cedric, and then they're like, oh, he's a spare, let's just kill him. So yeah, that's the idea. They want to make sure that Cedric never ends up, like, actually getting there. So what they do is, so Scorpius goes back in time, and he enchants the bubblehead charm on Cedric to just, like, lift him up into the sky and be really embarrassing. And he's like, well, that fixes everything. And then he comes back, and it turns out that doing that makes Voldemort win. He comes back, and it's a fascist dystopia where Hogwarts is literally full of Muggle torture chambers, and Snape is still alive, but also all of the bad guys are still alive. And it turns out that if Cedric Diggory lives, he turns evil and kills Neville Longbottom, and that Voldemort wins.
Oh my god.
So Scorpius is like, oh no. I need to find a way out of this. I know Snape is a good guy because of history, so I'm going to go up to Snape and, like, he's going to introduce me to the Resistance. And it turns out that Hermione Granger is, like, this badass post-apocalyptic wizardess who's, like, going around murdering everybody. And Ron is her husband, and it specifically says he's not as cool, but he's, like, kind of trying. And
oh my god.
So they managed to get him back and forward in time. And he, or back in time, or whatever. Like, they fix things. That's the important part. They fix things, and they come back, and the Ministry gets the Time Turner back, and everything is back to normal. But Scorpius and Albus are like, we can't trust the Ministry to destroy the Time Turner. We have to do it ourselves. So they steal the Time Turner back, and Delphi shows up and is like, hey, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, we're just destroying the Time Turner. And Delphi's like, cool, cool. Oh, by the way, I'm Voldemort's daughter.
Oh! That's dumb.
Yeah. Actually, Voldemort and Bellatrix Lestrange had a daughter, and then she showed up, and she kills a random, like, wizard, just to show them that it's serious business, and she takes him back in time, and she's like, okay, I want Voldemort to win, and I want to meet my dad, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to stop Voldemort from killing Harry's parents so the prophecy never happens, and Harry never grows up and stops him. And somehow, there's a convoluted way, but Harry Potter in the present finds out about this plan, so they all go back in time to the night Harry Potter's parents died, and it's like, quick, we need to stop Voldemort from not killing my parents!
Oh my god.
I'm so lost
now. It's so Batman. It's so Batman, though, because it all comes back to the parents getting killed. And that's totally... If I was going to write a really shitty Batman thing with time travel, it'd end up the same fucking way. Amazing.
Yeah.
Alternatively, Oedipus.
So, Harry Potter, with the help of his son and Scorpius, like, they have a ruse to arrest Delphi to prevent her from stopping Voldemort from killing Harry's parents. And then they just sort of watch, like, Harry's parents get killed. And that's like a bonding moment between Harry and his son. And then they go back to the present. The end.
Wow.
Scorpius is sniffing around Harry's, like, Hermione's daughter. And that's how it ends.
Oh,
it's
wow.
The dialogue, like, Harry says, you know, you're a bad son, but you'll never be as bad a son as I am for my parents.
I honestly think that if Voldemort won, and they're like, all right, last resort, we have to tell Muggles about wizards, the Muggles would just be like, oh, yeah, that's no problem. Like, I remember reading this one post where this guy's like, oh, he can turn invisible, we have, like, goggles that can see anything in the invisible stuff because of heat signatures. Like, it's not... We'll be fine. We'll figure it out. Like, I feel like the Muggles would totally just pwn fucking Voldemort in seconds. And then Harry Potter would be like, oh, I guess we just needed a gun. This whole time, we just needed guns?
Well, he can fly? What a coincidence. So can my 45.
The Muggles send their top agent, Adam Jensen.
All right.
Well, now you've spoiled it for me, and now there's no point in me reading it. Also, there's no point in me reading it because I don't care about Harry Potter, and it's apparently terrible. We'll be right back.
narrative dissonance.
No.